So Ram says, in addition to this, he mentions also other things set forth by the previous speakers in the same manner as each of the rest, viz. Job and his three friends repeat what the others have said. The purpose of this repetition is to conceal the opinion peculiar to each speaker and to make all appear in the eyes of the ordinary reader to utter one and the same view, although in reality this is not the case. See, there's a view, although in reality this is not the case. See, there's a... Apparently, the book of Iyov, the problems in the book of Iyov are of the greatest import. I mean, to a person, to an individual who wants to be a religious person. That's the these are the problems, the central problems. And it seems that apparently there's a danger involved there in disclosing some of the ideas to people who aren't ready yet to cope with them. And therefore, they're liable to lose whatever small amount of faith they have. Any religiosity they have. That's an important thing. That's why that's one area of caution over here that we have to be concerned with. Number one.
If a guy gets the wrong idea, he's going to turn completely off to Judaism.
Yeah.
Is that what
you're saying? All right. We generally extol God in words and praise Him as righteous and benevolent when we prosper and are happy, or when the grief we have to bear is moderate. That's the way people usually are. But it is otherwise when such troubles as are described in Job come over us. Some of us deny God and believe that there is no rule in the universe, even if only their property is lost. They lose their money, go bankrupt. Others retain their faith in the existence of justice and order, even when suffering from the loss of property, whereas loss of children is too much affliction for them, too much to take. Others remain firm in their faith, even with the loss of their children. But there is no one who can patiently bear the pain that reaches his own person. He then murmurs and complains of injustice, either in his heart or with his tongue. Nobody can take the pain of physical torture. That's impossible. Then once he has that pain, once he has that affliction, then definitely he's going to deny God. You see?
There has to be a cause for it. Once
there's
a cause, it goes back to
God. Either God knows what's happening to him, or God doesn't know what's happening to him. And his assumption is if God knows what's happening to him and doesn't do anything about it, and he's suffering tremendous pain and he knows that he's not wicked, so then he has a big problem. The only way that his mind can see out of it is to say very simply that God does not really care about what goes on. And this is something, this question, the way the Rambam puts it, I would say is the most potent question that there exists insofar as religion is concerned. It is the most powerful question. And that's why you'll always find people who lived through the Holocaust and people who had personal tragedies, you see, will always somehow deny it, you see. All right, unless there's a... See, things like this. Always on. Analogy of people. It's difficult to understand. Because most people do not turn against God in that way unless something happens to them personally. You see? But the truth of the matter is, the question that always bothers me is, didn't these people realize that there are other people around who have suffered tremendously? They never realize... It's as if these people assume that nobody else is just and everybody deserves what they got in their own eyes. Except when it comes to them, then suddenly the big question arises. How is this possible? How could God be unjust? Where was he when everybody else was suffering? There's no problem. There's no problem because it wasn't him. He assumed very easily that he gave very irrational solutions. That's it. But when it comes to him, then the problem becomes unbearable. This definitely shows is a reflection on the type of individual that really harbors such a question. It shows, first of all, very small-mindedness in the sense that they don't recognize anybody else. They didn't recognize anybody else besides themselves before the incident. Right? All the injustice in the world, all the pain that anybody else ever suffered was nothing. But now, suddenly, hey, where's the justice? They just woke up. Okay? All right? It shows a definite logical flaw in the way the person has has related himself to God and to reality. See? No question about it. Okay. What types of questions over here? There's the theoretical question, but the theoretical, then there is the personal question. Now, most people aren't on the level of the theoretical, even in practical affairs. So therefore, they do not notice any injustice until it strikes them, experientially. Before that, they're completely oblivious to it.
See? What is that? What is this state of
the world? Like Acher was different. Acher didn't suffer any harm, and he became an apikeris. But his argument was about the young boy that went up to the tree to make kind of two mitzvahs. Well, yeah, because there was an objective thing. See, he didn't have to wait for it to hit him. It was Acher was one of Chachmei Yisrael. So by him, it wasn't a matter of a person who has to wait for it to hit them personally. It shows you something about the level of the individual. It's really not up to par. As if everything is okay with everybody else, but there's no injustice in regard to anybody else. Everybody else, they deserve what they get. But me? Question is, hey, how's that possible? Okay. It shows a lack in the individual. The question is as to why the person became aware of the situation. Presently, during his suffering, not previously. See, that's one question. But the Book of Eve really is not concerned about that. The Book of Eve is concerned about what happens once he does become aware of the problem. What's the answer to the problem? The problem is not an easy one to answer. Okay? So let's go into the problem. But now think of this. As far as the book is concerned, we could go through the main ideas and give answers right away. You know what I mean? But I was thinking that wouldn't do it justice, because an answer is only as good as it can only be as far-reaching as the question is. You know what I mean? You can't have an answer that outreaches a question. I mean, an answer is a response to a question. So, as far as you understand the question, that's how far you can understand the answer. I think if we would just go through the ideas, I don't think we really would get the real impact of the questions. That's why I think it's important, really, to go through Eve. We should go through Eve itself. All right. Now. The man was wealthy. First of all, what does it say he had? He had family. He was very happy with his family, right? He also had possessions. He had possessions. And further
fame.
On, what? Fame. What does it say, fame?
And this man was the greatest of all children.
That's right. When it says this man was the greatest of all children of the East, it means that he had fame. He said, Eve later on, speaks about the fame. He had everything that a person could want. Everything a person could want. Living perfectly, living a perfect existence. He's a religious person. He was blessed with his health, physical health he had. He had children. He had wealth, and he had fame also. He had fame also. Okay? But he never got carried away by the... wealth. By all his wealth, he never got carried away. The Pasuk says a lot of times that Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat. Many times, and that's the whole story of Klal Yisrael. Why is Klal Yisrael always in such an ace sarah throughout the ages? Because it's very easy. It's easier to live with God when a person has troubles, because he runs for help. See? But once a person has... Yeah, because his need for security drives him to God. That's the way most people are. The need for security drives them to God. But the moment they have the security in the physical, they tend to forget. Leishman Yeshurun Vayivat. Pen, what was the pasuk say over there? By Eretz Yisrael. By Eretz Yisrael. By Eretz Yisrael says.
Leishman Yeshurun Vayivat.
Right? No, it's okay. Rav Lachashar Hashem Olkecha. So when a person has... when a person has the security... So the point is that as long as he has the emotional need for security, so he runs to God for the security. But once he has the physical security, then he tends to forget about God, because there's no need. His real relationship with God is basically on the level of satisfying his physical and his emotional needs. Now, once he feels secure in these things, there's no need anymore for God, so he tends to draw away from God slowly. It's a slow process. It doesn't mean he runs away quickly. It's a slow process if he gets a little... But you see, the pasuk indicates over here that Eve never did it. After every feast, he went and he was makriv kabanis.
Eve participated in
these
feasts?
Yeah, he participated in them also. What? He never allowed his successes to give him the illusion of security. He always knew the real security is God. And no matter what he had, he knew that this is nothing. Okay? So even after the biggest feast, he always thought maybe there was a chait. Maybe there was something wrong. Maybe he didn't allow it to give him a feeling of security. See, that's the important thing. Most people, when they have money, they're financially successful, they certainly have a certain feeling. That's what people want. Why do people want financial success? The main reason they want it is not because they want to do different things. Because, see, the wealthy don't really do that many different things than the poor people do. The average people do. But the reason is a certain feeling of success, a certain feeling of a contentment, like they have it. They made it. See, they have it. That feeling Eve didn't have. Yes.
Really?
People involved in, just because I'm telling you, because when people involve themselves in simcha and they let themselves go, let their emotions go, so there's always a danger that they're going to be chayt. As a matter of fact, that's why you have tainus bahab after the mayadim. The reason is because even though it's true you did l'shem shemayim, you hate to be in this frame of mind, good frame of mind, so you should be sameach and tev lev, but there's always a danger that the sameach and tev lev will not really be used totally for its objective. It will be carried away in its own objective of sameach and tev lev.
Why should you project on yourself?
It's just. The question is this just? For God to take away what he has in order to see whether he will still remain true to God. Right?
I think so.
Is that justice or not? Huh? Is that what you think is just?
Wait, I think so, yeah, because...
This didn't just go on once with Eve, but it can go on all the time. God could single out a person and say, let's really test and see whether he really is a test. It's really given as a test to him, right?
Okay.
What's your question?
I would say
man who had wealth, right? Wealth, prosperity, family, everything. The question is, did he deserve these things? That's the question. What do you say? Did he deserve these things? How would it seem from the psukim? Did he deserve it or not? So they should get one. They deserve these things, right?
The world is
prosperity. Shouldn't the material world, a person who is incorruptible, a person who is a tzaddik, shouldn't the material world, shouldn't it really help him? Anything he has, more materialism that he has, shouldn't it really help him to serve God? Provided if he's just, as long as he's not corrupted by the wealth and doesn't become an end in itself, right?
And you see what he
show you that he wasn't corrupted at all by the wealth. He doesn't have to spend time worrying about money. His emotions are taken care of, are satisfied in relationship to his family. He doesn't have grief. Look, the Rambam was one of the greatest philosophers that ever lived. The Rambam lost his brother, who was sick for a year, in bed for a year, couldn't get out of bed. So you see, even a great chacham like that he could be affected emotionally. A person can be affected emotionally. So his emotions were, a person's destroyed, he can't be cancer Hashem. Yaakov Avinu was certainly a big enough philosopher, a big enough tzaddik, chacham. Nevertheless, for 22 years when Yosef was lost, so the Shekhinah didn't reside with him. Why? Because his emotions were broken, and the Shekhinah is only Sharim Matech Simcha. So you see, even a person on a tremendous level, any human being, the greatest human being, under certain conditions, emotions will play a role, will prevent him from living in the best possible way. And it will take away. Yaakovin lost out 22 years of Shekhinah, big loss. He lost out. But that's the way it was. So that's the case, certainly. Everything that a person has, all the good that a person has, material good, family, this, it's all if it's used for the good, certainly it's beneficial. Doesn't do him any harm, and definitely doesn't good. Doesn't have to worry about finances. He can learn, he can think, he can do mitzvahs, he can concentrate on doing the good. Rambam says
that doesn't mean it's right
to be
that way.
Why isn't it right? If God created the world, that a person who is a tzaddik and who lives most properly should be blessed with everything that can help them to continue to live that way?
Yep.
Isn't that a rational premise?
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's attach himself to the physical.
One second. From the physical, he has to withdraw from the physical totally in order to allow himself to get involved in the spiritual. Once he's involved in Torah, then he could definitely, on the contrary, then he should partake of the angelus. This Chazal says just the opposite. If every fruit, the Yerushalmi says, that a person passes by and doesn't eat, will be us litness of dinner because of that.
Yeah.
So these things can't do. But that hasn't to do with Ashgach. We're talking about Ashgach.
Yeah. With the
true ways and true ideas, the correct life, that he should be blessed with the good, because the material good is not going to corrupt him, only benefit him. In this physical world, since we are physical, we have physical needs, and therefore the physical good insofar as it takes care of those needs, is a good thing, right?
Right.
Why? The Rambam says it. The Rambam says it openly. The Rambam says it openly in the Hilchas Shura. Openly. says, well, he says, since the whole benefit of the whole good is really Chayel Amabo and the living according to mitzvahs, the Torah and everything, he says, why does the Torah say, the Torah says openly, all in the brachas, all the brachas, and you'll be able to chase your enemies. You won't have any problem with the war. You'll have secure, total security, and then the food, wealth, all the brachas, ashtres and echav, all the brachas in the Torah, openly, physical wealth. I mean, wealth, some of that wealth. Even the cholikim, tashmai reshman eres, v'roiv dogna v'sirah, shevduch amin, v'shtach v'chol l'umim, heve gvir l'achecha, v'shtach v'chol b'nei mecha, min arecha arm v'rachecha baruch. What more do you need than that? That's it. Right? So all the brachas in the Torah, and the brachas in the later, and then the end of Vayikra and Kisavai. So, I mean, you can't deny it. It's open in the Torah. Would seem that way. Seem that that's a rational thing, right? Yes, yeah, so the Rambam says it's not that they themselves are good, but it allows you to do the good. Let's face it, if we didn't have any financial burdens, we'd be able to learn more, right? Okay? How many guys are troubled now, have to go to college, school, this, that? I mean, it's a klala, it's a klala. If they had more, if they had financial security, right, they wouldn't have to do these things. They'll sit and learn. Okay, yeah. People would see it. As they're saying, that people would see it. I'll tell you why. Because what happens is like this. In other words, the truth of the matter is that I deserve to have everything good happen to me. Because I'm really just. But because that jerk across the street might look at me, he's going to say, hey, I think I'll become from Tzol. Take my bechira. So therefore, God has to go eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and take out a few tzaddikim and make them suffer for these guys in order to, what do you call it?
They should have the bechira.
They should have the bechira. Right? That's the case. You have to admit, you have to maintain that there's inherent injustice in this world. Because that's an injustice. Isn't that an injustice? Isn't it an injustice? Let me ask you this. Let's say, for instance, you were teaching a class, right? And you had good kids and you had bad kids. Now, every now and then, you'd go over to a good kid and give him a slap in the face. Why? Because the other kids should really do it for the right reason. They shouldn't be good because they want to get the prize. Would that be just? Would that be justice?
No.
I don't think you'd have a job too long, I tell you. That certainly wouldn't be considered justice. So then you're going to have to say that God does injustice for another reason. But you're going to have to admit that there's a tremendous element of injustice going on in this world over here. Right?
Besides, for the country,
there's injustice. I'm suffering for him. I didn't do anything. I was a tzaddik. I deserve to have everything I need. And now I have to go hungry and starve because of the guy next door to me. He's going to look at me. What kind of justice is that?
Science is why the Torah itself.
This is beneficial for the guy who practices it. But there's two reasons why a person can do something. He either does something because it directly affects his benefit or because it's justice. But justice itself is beneficial.
What's the justice of it?
Justice. That's the benefit. The justice per se is the benefit. What else do with this? He'll talk about God giving the person a punishment because of another guy. That's not that definitely is not justice.
No, that's not even what's happening
here. He really lived according to the good way, right? So it would seem, that's a very good point, it would seem that God would really bestow his goodness upon the Jews, and the Jews would lack nothing, and they would live as a nation that has everything as long as they live according to, where's the Bechira?
It
would seem from over there that the moment there was a turn of events over there by the Megillah, right, by Purim, so everything turned out in favor of the Jews, immediately they started to become Jews, the Goyim, right, they converted. So you see that Donnie's right also, I mean that there is such an effect. There is such an effect. But apparently, but from there, but you see that God does not prevent that from happening, even though even though that would be the natural result. But the important thing in God's eyes is justice to the one who's good. So therefore, if the other ones who aren't good do it out of insincerity, then they're going to be losing out by their doing it out of insincerity. You see?
But it's a contradiction.
No, out of insincerity, so he is losing out. You really can't. In other words, justice can only be goodness can only be goodness if it's done for the right reason. See? Now, if everybody's going to, let's say, for instance, a person will see somebody that's from that suddenly, as soon as he becomes from, becomes a millionaire, and everything's fine with him. So he'll say, okay, I'm going to become from too. But that really isn't real from God, is it?
That doesn't take away from the bechira.
Yeah, it doesn't take away from his bechira.
That's the reason, because you can do it for the right reason.
Keep the Torah. They would immediately be blessed with all the good that's written in the Torah. You have to say that would happen. I mean, that's what Torah says would happen, so we have to assume that would happen, right?
It's so written.
So it is written. So therefore, you'd have to say that we wouldn't have the problems with Egypt, with any of the other problems that we have, and everything would be fine, right? Yeah, they don't seem to accept that. But the, all right. Why is this justice? Is it just to take away from a person what is due because of somebody else? I would say that that's not justice. Justice means justice you have to deal with the individual himself. If a person deserves something, justice means that he gets it. Somebody else is going to be harmed by losing his bechira? That's tough. But the fact remains that the that this person who deserves the good should get the good. All right? Yeah, I'm a great physician. So I go over to somebody and I'll beat him. He's sick, I'll beat him up. Then a month later, I'll come up and I'll cure him. I'm doing well, that's the only one working cure.
If it's dependent, is it dependent?
The truth of the matter is that he will benefit.
At this point
in his life, he really deserves to have his health, right? But God will step in and take away his health, right? In order that he should gain a greater benefit. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
This good, his health. What do you mean he deserves it? He deserves it, but why does he deserve it? He's saying that when you say deserves it, you're saying this is a good for him to have his health? Does he deserve it? Take it away from him in order he gets a greater benefit, right? But right now, does he deserve to have his health?
Yes.
He deserves it. Why does he deserve to have his health?
He's doing just.
He's a tzaddik.
Yeah.
But now explain to me, if he deserves to have something, you mean justice dictates that he has, that should have it, right?
Yeah.
Now what are you telling me? Now you're telling me you're taking it away, right?
Taking
away is an act of injustice.
Not really, because
it's not an act of injustice. Of the better benefit or this benefit?
That's the question he deserves.
I want to know what he deserves.
That's the question he deserves.
Dictates that he should have his health.
Just
a minute ago. Does he deserve his health? Now,
does
he deserve it?
No.
He doesn't deserve
it.
Well, what does he deserve now? He doesn't deserve anything.
Deserving
is a causal
thing.
Well, just ask.
What's the question?
Now, does justice dictate at every turn what should occur? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Well, if it doesn't, then there's nothing as justice. Well, it doesn't, right? Now, what does justice dictate to this man now? That he maintains himself or that he doesn't maintain himself? What do you say? One of two things? What does the man deserve? John is justice dictate. You don't know what deserve. What does justice dictate that should occur at this point? What does God's justice dictate? Now, please tell me, what does it dictate? Which a person has to manipulate within the realm of society. But we're speaking about objective justice here. We're not talking about investments. All right? We know that in this world, the way the society is set up, you have to forfeit something in order to gain something. Let's say that's the way it's set up, right? Society made this. There's no universal need. Unjust. Okay. We don't have to go through this whole thing with investments. Simple thing. Simple formula. A man was a healthy man. And he decided he was healthy, and he wasn't religious. He decided to become religious, right? He decided to do something good. Now, the moment that he decided to do something good, he immediately fell ill. Okay. Now the question is, where is the justice?
Oh boy.
The answer is that the illness is a blessing for him, because really he is imperfect, and therefore the moment he became righteous, he deserved to have an imperfection removed, which would be removed via his illness. So his illness in reality was a blessing, which he wouldn't have been religious, so then he would have retained his health, which would have been a terrible thing for the rest of his life. Okay? All right. Yeah. All right? Is that what you're saying? That's what he's saying. They find an advantage in actual illness. They haven't been able to discover any benefits yet of that, per se. But the only thing is that through this, it could lead to perfection. Okay. Then, in other words, justice demands that he become ill in order that he has something better, right? Okay. Now, of course, that's based on one premise. What is the premise that's based on? Yes.
That's
an imperfection. Very good. It's based on the premise that he has an imperfection. Because since the man has an imperfection and his illness is necessary to remove the imperfection that he has, right? Correct? So therefore, his imperfection is really... Now, when a person has an imperfection, would you say that imperfection is good or the imperfection is evil?
Evil.
It's evil. So in other words, correct? So therefore, we're not really saying anything different. We're not really saying the man became perfect and became ill. We're saying he became ill due to his imperfections. Isn't that right? And because there is a part of him which is evil, that's why it was necessary for him to have this onesh. In other words, it's no different than any other onesh. Right? Now, in other words, for that you wouldn't write a book of Eev. Right? If Eev had imperfections, then the Torah would say, then this is no dilemma. This is this we understand. A person has imperfections, necessarily evil befalls him in order to remove the imperfection. Isn't that the purpose of all evil that befalls us, that God has evil befalls in order to remove imperfection? So this is no different than any other case where evil befalls him. Right? Right? Okay? Then this is no question. Certainly this is not a theological question. If a person is imperfect, naturally, insofar as he's imperfect, insofar as he can't improve himself and he didn't improve himself, that's an imperfection. And evil will occur. In other words, he will have something, well, you can't call it evil, it's for his benefit. But something which we consider bad, right, will occur. For him, it really is a good. So in order to perfect it, this is the regular case of justice. But if you take a look at the psukim over here in Eev, I don't think that's the case that the psukim are discussing. Because the psukim say like this. And so I have to go back to the Hebrew there. Isha Yeveritz Ut Eev Shemai. Vahayo Ishahu Tom. What does Tom mean?
Complete.
Complete, perfect. How do they translate it? Wholehearted? Well, wholehearted. It means perfect, perfected. Tom means perfection. Tom the Yashar. Tom the Yashar. The Yirei Elikim. The Sor Meira. What is the pasuk trying to tell you about this man? In one word, what is the pasuk trying to tell you? The man is perfected. Perfected individual, right? Now, certainly the answers which you've given me would not apply to a person who is a perfected individual, but rather to an imperfected individual. In which case, we would have to say that what happens here to Eev is an injustice. An injustice. Okay? Would he get an onus for that?
Yeah, that's not punishable anymore.
That's not punishable.
See, this, you
can't.
The situation you created with nature.
The word perfection, you equivocally. Perfection is used equivocally, not univocally. Perfection means there's human perfection. Then there's perfection insofar as reality is concerned. So far as reality is concerned, then we have to deal with God, because God is the source of reality. God is the existence beyond all existences, and that's the way reality is. And as far as the ultimate reality, man's perfection is imperfection. But here we're speaking as far as man is concerned. As far as man is concerned, certainly a person would not receive a punishment for not understanding God's essence. No one can know positively what God's essence is. But you're going to get an einish for that? Would the Rambam get an einish because he didn't know what Moshe Rabbeinu get an einish? Because he didn't know what God is? Can't say that. Because insofar as he is perfected insofar as the Bria, like the Gemara says over there, the Bria that he is. Insofar as the Bria that he is, he's perfected himself. So therefore, he certainly doesn't deserve an einish. And the Torah says that once a Bria reaches its perfection, once man reaches perfection, he gets all the good. He gets all the good, all the money, all the esteem, all the health, the family, fame, all these things follow, right? Okay. But that doesn't answer the question in the Eev. To the non-physical, and there is no need whatsoever to take care of your physical body or in any other thing, so you don't need brachas. You wouldn't notice the difference. What's the purpose of the Torah? The Torah says, what wasn't the case? Yasho, Yirei, Elikim, Visor, Meira. That's after the Kabbanis. So obviously there's nothing wrong with the Kabbanis. You're not going to find anything wrong here. Torah, God says again that he's Tamva, Yasho, Yirei, Elikim, Visor, Meira. Yes.
Is it possible?
The question is like this. In other words, now he's asking a question of Nisayon.
Right?
You know? But that's a good point. He's saying that the apostle seems to say it wasn't God's idea. Yeah, let's say that's part of the parable there.
Because
God agreed. Trial. A Nisayon, a trial. Right? A trial.
Is a Nisayon.
It means that even though he's just and he's good and perfect, but the only thing is that right now we decide to give him a trial to see if he's going to pass this test. Right? Now you certainly can't say it's a question in God's knowledge whether he's going to pass the test or not, right? Right? So you must say that it's some benefit insofar as the man is concerned. Right? Okay. Now insofar as the man is concerned, if it's a benefit insofar as he's concerned, correct? So would you say that now we're back to the same argument you had before? That he deserves, at this point, he really has an imperfection. Because if this trial is going to improve him, it means that he hasn't really reached his perfection. Right? On the other hand, if this trial will improve him, so then he's not perfect. Right? If the trial is not going to improve him, then he's reached perfection and he doesn't deserve the trial. If the trial is going to improve him, so you can say he's not perfect, right? He's not perfect, so then it's the, so then it's the same. So then, naturally, back to the old thing. We said a person who isn't perfect, God causes to suffer in order to improve him.
The question is, why is this on four?
Oh, so then in that case, you can't say he's perfect. But let's take a look at the pasuk. The pasuk says, the Yashar, the Yirei, Elohim, the Sur, Merah. Free the balance. Same thing, every Yiddish, of course, we know that already. Torah said that already many places.
Isn't there an idea?
At that point in time, right? But he was as perfect as he could be, right? Now, however, since he was as perfect as he could be in that point in time, but you're saying he was capable of greater perfection.
Right.
Is that what he's saying? He was great. So in other words, so was he as perfect as he could be if he's capable of greater perfection?
As could be based on the parameters he had.
Yeah.
Situation.
But he needed a new situation to affect him more. And this new situation, you're saying, was the suffering that he experienced.
What should have been his argument,
but you're saying that, in other words, like you're saying that the man was as perfect as he could be based upon the situation that he was in. Right? But since He could reach perfection, this man. But the only way he could reach perfection was how? Was through this new experience. Right? And this new experience had to be, in his case, it had to be a painful experience in order to reach a higher level. Right? So it was nothing more than an experience which was necessary in order to perfect him more. That's the suggestion that he makes. Okay? The question is like this. Is that the way that man has to come to perfection? In other words, through suffering? Is that the way that a man has to come to perfection? Do we maintain that? Is that what Yadis maintains?
Yes.
Yes, that's so.
That's what?
The Torah really false. Because the brachas in the Torah say that if people follow the way of Hashem, right, then they'll have the brachas. But you're saying it's not true. Because even if you follow, then you're gonna need bad experiences in order to improve you more. So really, it comes out that the brachas is not the way. Brachas and terror is not true.
Because it holds you back.
Right?
Join the monks and the.
So this is true. I guess you're saying that that the brachas and the terror are in generalities. Generalities.
That's what I'm saying.
Now, what are you saying? That's such a good answer to it, right? That's funny. Not one of the answers is that. Now, one of the answers in the Sefer Eiv is that. There are a lot of answers. You have four answers from the friends over there, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have two answers from God. Now, one of those answers says that the reason why Eiv went through this was in order to gain more knowledge. It doesn't say that. Mm-hmm. It would seem quite clearly that those... you're giving me a very simple answer to the whole Sefer. The reason for the Sefer is because this was necessary. In order to perfect him, which I say is against the brachas and the Torah. Brachas and Torah is the opposite way. That the whole perfection of man is not dependent upon unpleasant experiences, but on the contrary, perfection of man is just the opposite. Man's perfection is when he has pleasant experiences so that he can really improve his knowledge. Right? But you're telling me that a painful experience is something which, even though he's reached perfection, the painful experience is going to perfect him. I mean, this is an odd formula. It's against everything that's written in the Torah. That a solution certainly would have been mentioned as a solution. It's not even mentioned as a possibility.
It doesn't exclude the possibility.
Okay. Mentioned as a possibility.
But that doesn't exclude the possibility that it's possible.
What we should do is the question still is a good question. It's not an answer, but it's a question. The question is, why can't you really say that it becomes a question, not an answer. The question is, why can't you really say that the possibility? The possibility that that perfection in man, he's perfect insofar as the experiences that he had, but now he needs painful experiences in order to perfect him more.
So then he wasn't perfect,
right?
What? You mean situationally?
It's a logical possibility, isn't it? The Torah doesn't accept the brachas and the calls of the Torah. The brachas say that you'll have good things happen to you if you do
that.
But the answer remains a question. The answer nevertheless remains a question. Why can't you say, really, that the person will become perfected through unpleasant experiences? Yeah, through illness. Through unpleasant experiences. The unpleasant experience will tend to make him more perfect. That's a good question. That's a question I have to take up next week. And another thing I want to understand is that's why the Rambam in the Meir Nevuchim has a lot of difficulty with Nisyanis, with Nisayan. Yeah. If you ever look at the Rambam on trials in the Meir Nevuchim, you'll find that the Rambam has a lot of difficulty explaining. A lot of people don't understand it. What's the Rambam with Nisayan? The Rambam comes to the conclusion that Nisayan is something which is done only for public. It has nothing to do with the something that's done for the public. Right?
That's his argument.
Right. That was your argument, or what? That the Am has a difficulty in understanding Nisayan. Because Nisayan is a difficulty in terms of justice. Because the question is, Mamanafshah, what does justice dictate at this point? Does justice dictate at this point that he should be perfected? It means he's imperfect. Mm-hmm. So then it's an Amish. Right?
Right.
Okay? All right. But then the question is that we're faced with now is the question that was raised by Ben. The question is, why can't I say that that an unpleasant experience really is performed by God in order to perfect the person? That's a good question. Why isn't that a good answer? You see, the Torah is against it, but why isn't that a good answer?
Why?
Okay.
Maybe you can
answer the prophecy. Hello, the mitzvah.
To him, something pink. Nobody answers that. Nobody gives an answer.
Right.
In the end, and Eliyahu, no, what are the needs for the answers? Well, that's it. He went higher. You know, there's no need for the answers. God changed the situation, so they should go higher. You know, the whole Eve you wouldn't need. All these answers, and God's answers in the end, and Elihu's answers. You know, the whole, it's just, as the answer.
That's right.
That's right. It's good. Give me a higher Madrega. Should always be good. It's a good thing. Yeah, what's the answer? The answer that you see, Yahadus has a certain idea that there is a road to perfection. It's an idea. There's a specific road to perfection. Right? See, the guy in Lahavdil wouldn't have any problem with this. Because they had their... The Christians used to go into the deserts and torture themselves. They brought torture upon themselves. So they felt that the experience of the torment was one which raised them to a higher level. Right? The very experience raised them to a higher level. That's why they brought torture upon themselves. Certainly they wouldn't complain if God would bring torture upon them, right? That would be a blessing. It would save them the trouble of bringing it upon themselves. Right? Ah. Right?
Be less torture.
What? That's true. I mean, they're fooling themselves, yeah. But the fact remains... but the fact...
Yeah.
A person perfect himself. What does Yada say? How does a person perfect himself? There's two ways that a person perfects himself. Actually, it's one way, but there's one prerequisite. The one way that a person perfects himself is through knowledge. Mitzvahs. I see some mitzvahs in the Talmud Torah, right? That's the way a person perfects himself. Okay? Now, since that is the case, right? So you'll ask me, but what about suffering? Yeah, you have suffering in one case. What do you have suffering? Like the Rambam says, if a person has a bad midah, so he has to uproot the bad midah. Because the bad midah could prevent him from gaining knowledge. But once that bad midah is uprooted, and the coast is clear for the gain of knowledge, then the only way that he could perfect himself is through knowledge. So there is no place here for suffering. Suffering, on the contrary. Suffering removes a person from knowledge. Because when a person is in a state of torture, of suffering, he can't think properly. So since Yahadus maintains that the soul, the only way that a person perfects himself is through knowledge, so suffering would not be to any avail, would not improve his knowledge in any way. The only way, there's a way to improve yourself. Yahadus maintains that there is a way to improve yourself. What's the way? Through knowledge. So therefore, when the faculty of the mind is in such a situation where it can operate to the best of its ability, it's free from both pleasures and pain. Pleasures detract it and pain detracts it. But when it's free from both of these extremes, and it's in a state where it can reflect clearly, that is the situation in which man gains. Man gains from knowledge. So therefore there's no place for torture or suffering here to improve him. The only element of pain that a person has to be involved in is if he has a bad midah. So then he has to, he might have to go through a painful situation, like the Rambam says, go to the other extreme to remove it. You see, to free himself from this attachment. That is possible. That might be painful. Of course, it's not the painful experience. It's the freeing himself from the attachment, which is important. Right? But barring that, possibility. Barring that, that's the way the Rambam interprets the Kedoshim, Kedoshim to you. Kaddish Asmacha V'Mutalach. Kaddish Asmacha V'Mutalach means to perfect yourself in those things, to do certain things which you personally find that you have certain emotional weaknesses, certain midos that are bad. That's what it means. You see? But there is no, it's not a general thing either, Rambam says, no general thing. It's specific. Each yachid with his own things. You can't even learn that from Tanoim or Moroim, what they do, because each one has to deal with his own makeup, the way he is individually. Every person is different. So you can't learn from Chazal. One Chazal did this thing. That was his need that he was working on. You might not have that need at all. Just wasting your time. So it's an individual thing. But barring that, there is no area for suffering. Suffering is on the contrary. Suffering is the worst thing. It removes a person from the ability to contemplate, which is his real perfection. His real perfection is when he's involved in thought, involved in knowledge. So therefore, there is no painful experience which could really open up any new doors for him. The way to open up new doors is through knowledge, a natural progression of knowledge. That's the way to do it. So therefore, the suffering and the pain cannot be explained as a means to improve the person. It will not improve him. The only time it will improve him is if it removes him from bad midah and permits him to see an idea which he couldn't see because of this midah. You see? But over here, this wouldn't be true. Why wouldn't it be true? Because it says that it was Ishtam, the Yashar, the Re'elakim, the Sormera. So he was perfected in midas. I mean, the Torah can't give you any better description of perfection in midas than Ishtam, the Yashar, the Re'elakim, the Sormera. So apparently the man was totally perfected in terms of his midas. Right? So there was no need for any suffering. The suffering only did one thing to him. It prevented him from reflecting or from gaining knowledge. Since that's the case, so then you can't explain it that way. If you believe that the experiential is perfection, then you'd be right. Then you'd say, yeah, the experiential is perfection. But apparently Yadis does not maintain that the experiential is perfection. Hold that way. The road to perfection is for knowledge. That's the road. So therefore, the suffering will not improve in any manner. What is the knowledge gained from suffering? So he says. So the person, that's why he says he cautions the person to take care of his health. He goes, without a guf bari v'sholem, he says you can't really serve Hashem to the fullest extent. So according to that, it's an evil. It has to be an evil. I mean, you can't walk on both.
That's true, but what?
There's not maintained. There's any gain in suffering.
What I want to understand is why
there's no gain in suffering. Gain is in knowledge. That's where the gain
true?
Is. So if a person is suffering, then he is not gaining. He's losing. He's losing, not gaining. Now the question is. The only time that suffering could be a gain is if he didn't. Yeah, if he needs it in order to perfect himself. But that's a person who didn't perfect himself. But a person who perfected himself, that's why the kasha is so big. That's why it's such a big kasha. I mean, you have to understand. You know, it's a big kasha. Yeah.
I don't understand this philosophy.
Gain is a perfection because it's a necessary. It's something necessary in this world for practicality. So therefore. The experience of pain is good because it teaches a person to bear pain.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you're saying?
Right. Well,
all right. Okay. Is that it's a benefit to a person to be able to take pain, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, so Bernie says you're not talking about Eve because apparently Eve was able to take pain, right? Because it says he was perfected. Is that what he's arguing?
I don't understand the question. Forget about he's asking in general. We just said that.
Eve was suffering in order to be able to take more pain?
I'm not really sure because, I mean...
You want to say that maybe that's why you're suffering in order to be able to take pain?
That's a possibility, but I haven't even... I thought
it. Pain is good because each person in life has a lot of pain. So therefore, it's a good argument. So therefore, you need pain. You have to be able to endure pain. So a good dose, a good heavy dose... will condition you to the smaller doses that you have through life. It says that if that's the case, so then he should get a jump on the gun. That's
why
right.
Why wait for God to give me a thing and then
I
cause it to myself so that I'm
okay. Right. Go through basic training. Basic training. Right.
Basic training.
He's using the method of reductio ad absurdum. You know what I mean? Reduction to absurdity. That's the type of argument he's using. In other words, the argument is that if this is true, then something else true. We see that's false. That's true. But you're not showing why it's wrong.
Inherently
from within. It's reduction to absurdity. See? I might not inflict pain upon myself.
Okay.
Dog has a broken leg. Or a cat, because I had a case with a cat. Okay. Now, a cat has a broken leg. Okay? Now, you'll notice what the cat does is it simply avoids jumper, simply avoids that leg.
Stop jumping.
But it can't jump anymore, but it can walk around on the other three legs.
Right?
Okay. Now, an animal immediately adjusts to a situation in which it's incapacitated. Right. The animal will just go on with what it has left. Never will you hear the animal complain and say, I can't take it anymore.
Right? At least not in those words.
Right? Right. Why? Because the animal is a good case of where you have pain isolated from the... you have pain alone, the factor of pain alone, isolated, you see. Whereas in a human being, you have pain plus. The animal only has pain. A human being has pain plus. The human being, the Rav has a nice chiluk in one of his lectures over there in the tradition he gave me. He says there's a difference between pain and suffering. He says an animal has pain, but it never suffers. A person suffers. See? An animal has pain. It reacts to pain. It gives a shriek. A human being suffers. Suffers means when he says he can't stand anymore, can't take it. He makes an evaluation of his life. Starts evaluating his life. And he senses that within this framework, his life is worthless. It's a value judgment, you see? An animal doesn't do that. An animal just, whatever it has, it does. It continues, you see? Just pure pain. That's what Danny's saying. That's the example. Now, go ahead. I just want to interrupt you with the example. He says, it's worthless. It's a value judgment, you see? An animal doesn't do that. An animal just, whatever it has, it does. It continues, you see? Just pure pain. That's what Danny's saying. That's the example. Now go ahead. I just want to interrupt you with the example. He says that by Eov, he says that's why the order of his losses. That's the order of his losses. First, he lost his wealth. He says that's a hard thing to endure. He says, but some people can endure that. He says then he lost his kids. Kids already is a little harder to endure. He says, but even people who can endure loss of money and loss of children, he says no one can endure pain. That's what he says. No one can endure pain to the extent that he have had it. See? That's true. Pain is the hardest. No question about it. I agree with that. But therefore, guys, so where do you carry from there? Nobody's really approaching the problem. I don't see anybody approaching the problem per se. I mean, you could argue here day and night. I don't see anybody approaching. You look for your shoes, you can't find them. It's painful. So, you now, right? You have that problem? Okay. Don't tell anybody about your problems. Now, the thing is like this. Thing is, this is not personal. Take care of it later. Approaching. What do we have to approach here? What we have to do is break down the components of the endurance of pain. How does it work? I mean, what do you mean endure pain? How does it work? Let's get down to how it operates. Now, let's take the case. You have a case of the cat and the man. Right? Now, in the cat, you find that a cat experiences pain. Right? Now, you have to agree that the cry of the cat, right, which is a result of the pain, that is something which is a natural reaction to pain, which a man will definitely experience. Right? Okay. That's the physiology of pain. The physiology of pain, you can't perfect, because you can't change your physiological system. Right? Your physiological makeup. Right? Then there is, beyond the physiological, what's the next step that you have beyond the physiological? You have the psychological, okay. Now we're dealing with the psychological aspects of pain. So what are the psychological aspects of pain? Let's understand. What do you consider, what actually makes a person, gives him that perfection that he can endure pain? What really gives him, wherein lies that perfection? That's the question. Wherein lies that perfection to be able to endure pain? Alright, let's take a look. A man suffers, a man hurts his hand, right? Now, the hurt, the actual physiological pain, there's nothing he can do about. He experiences that. You're not going to affect him that way, right? Okay. So then what way... But each person, whatever... When you say a threshold, what do you mean by threshold? Do you mean tolerance of pain? Well, if you're talking about tolerance, then you're talking about the psychological, aren't you? You don't mean that people experience pains in different ways, do you? Like one person, you put a nail through his hand, he's going to hurt him. Another person, it won't hurt him, or it'll hurt him less. That's possible. I mean, we can't really. I don't think there's any way scientifically to ever find that out. I mean, because it's an individual thing. Maybe one guy's nerves aren't as perceptive as the other guy's nerves. But they can't do anything about that. I mean, it's a physiological thing, right? Okay. Now,
So the next step, we're up to the psychological, right? Now, what is, let's say, given that there's a perfection in enduring pain, wherein lies that perfection? What is the perfection there? How would you describe the perfection to endure pain? Certainly it's not to change your physiological makeup and convert it from pain to pleasure. Okay, what is it? Awareness of the fact that he's suffering, which is disturbing to him. You see, a person, an animal doesn't have any ego. He doesn't have any self that he reflects upon. He just feels the pain. But a person starts reflecting upon a state, and he says, I cannot endure this state. Right? Okay. Now, you say that the perfection is in the acceptance of the state. Right? Okay. Now, is there any difference between the acceptance of that state of pain or the acceptance of any reality? Is there any difference between the acceptance of that state of pain or the acceptance of any reality? Or is that the same type of acceptance which applies everywhere else, and now we apply it over here as well? It's the same acceptance. Okay, right. So therefore, what we're speaking about is we're speaking about the ability for a person to accept reality. Correct? All right. All right. And he who is in line with reality will be able to accept reality to a greater degree than he who is not in line with reality. Correct? Okay, then we have to understand what places a person in line with reality. Right? Okay?
You're saying it doesn't... Once you're saying that this is...
That's a reality. Now, what really causes a person to accept reality? What causes a person to accept reality? How does knowledge cause a person to accept reality?
By realizing that like the physical...
Let's work it the opposite way. What prevents a person from accepting reality? How would... Could you show me how a lack of knowledge prevents a person from accepting reality? What is it? Let's take a look at a practical case. A person is sick, is suddenly struck with an illness, right? Now, there must be certain thoughts. If we investigate this, let's take this as an experiment. We investigate the thoughts in his mind, and we'll see which thoughts are prevent him from accepting reality. Now, what are the thoughts that go through the mind of an individual who is suddenly struck with illness and finds that he can't... what? How should you know? The question is, why did it happen to him? Why did this have to happen? Right? These are the main questions that occur to him, right? Oh, right? Yeah, what did he do to deserve it? Okay. But would you not say that one strong aspect, one underlying premise that the man is operating with is that it did not have to happen?
And especially...
Right. Because when a man says, why did it happen to me, the question is why it could have happened to him.
Right?
And since that possibility exists, so therefore it's very disturbing that it did happen to me and not to the next guy. Right? Right? Okay. Right? Ah. Now, if a person would really have knowledge of the fact that it couldn't have happened to anybody else, but it had to happen to him, right? Then certainly this question wouldn't exist, right? And therefore he would be in a position of acceptance. Correct? So really, what causes the person, what prevents him from accepting reality, is the imagination that it didn't have to occur. Since he's linked to that imagination that it did not have to occur, he finds it very difficult to accept, because it didn't have to happen, so why did it happen? Right? But if a person had the knowledge that it has to happen, right, then obviously his question of why it happened to him would be absurd. Right? The person accepting reality is the knowledge. Right? The knowledge of the fact that this has to be. Because since he doesn't have the knowledge that it has to be, so therefore he constantly keeps on thinking that it didn't have to occur, right? Okay. So acceptance really comes from the knowledge that it has to occur, right? Okay. The person would have knowledge, he'd have all knowledge like God, he'd be able to see why it has to happen. Then he wouldn't be able to say why it has to happen, right?
Okay.
Right. Yes, having the knowledge is the emotion.
Right.
You see? It's the emotion. All right?
Happen
that he still would have the same complaint? Or are you saying that the emotion prevents him from seeing that idea? Let's say we'd show him black on white that this had to happen. The moment he walked in the door, it had to occur. This had to have the...
Really
he can't accept it. In other words, okay. Being, right? In the area of pleasure, it'll express itself the same way, right? Ah.
So therefore, since that's the case, right? Since that's the case, so we cannot say that there's any benefit in pain. You see, there's nothing specific about pain. There's no benefit in pain per se. It's just a general imperfection in the man, in the human being.
What about the Rambam?
All right. Now, pain seems to be dependent upon the inability for the person to live according to knowledge. Now, the inability of it's not physiologically he needs pain. It's the inability to live according to knowledge. Now, the inability could express itself in a few ways. You see.
So therefore,
the ability to withstand pain is not a specific quality. It has to do with the person's general state of perfection. Okay?
So therefore you don't need
pain in order to be able to improve yourself. But you have to improve yourself just like you improve yourself in every area. You have to improve yourself in he who is improved in every area, the more perfect man will be able to stand more pain than the more imperfect man. It's a general thing. You understand? It doesn't really help him in any way. I'll tell you why. Because if he is imperfected, insofar as he's imperfected, so when he comes to pain, his imperfections are going to express themselves. Right? So therefore, if he's imperfected, so he's going to express itself in the area of pain just as much as in any other area. Pain per se won't help him. The ability to tolerate pain is not a specific ability to tolerate pain. It is a general indication of the man's state of perfection. That's what it is. You see?
But what about
there
a
is no
that's perfected in every other area?
Can't be.
Oh,
if
okay,
a person's
oh,
perfected in every area, right. He will be perfected insofar as the acceptance of those things in life which are painful.
Right.
And he who is less perfect will be able to stand the endurance test of pain very, very poorly. You see? Less. Person thinks more when he's in pain. Does he really think as we know thinking, or does he really complain more than usual? In other words, like I said, the guy who wins the raffle doesn't go around questioning so much why he won it. You see? But the one who disaster strikes, he immediately starts questioning. But is the person thinking really, or are his thoughts just really an expression of the imperfection of his soul? It's not really thinking processes going on. You see? What would you say? Well, he has, and he realizes that this is the way it has to be, and he accepts it. So then he will. So then he won't think as much. The thinking over here is not really a thinking. It's really an attempt. You'd say like this: it's a frustrated attempt to change the reality. That's what it is.
When does people reevaluate?
Evaluate his money, and he loses all his money, so he's liable to think to himself, maybe money isn't really the thing in life. That's a reevaluation. Then it would be good. But then you're dealing with a person who does not have the proper value system. But he who has the proper value system, it's not going to do him any good. And even if it's the case where the person has the proper value system. See? Right? That's the point. So that's a benefit of pain which can cause him to do tshuva. That's really the benefit of pain that we have. That's an onesh. That's our concept of onesh. Onesh is supposed to cause a person to reevaluate. But that's because he's on the wrong track. And suddenly he gets hit. He says, one second. Why are you, what am I doing? See? Something's wrong.
No.
That is perfected, right? And he can't think properly in one of the three cases that we mentioned. Insofar as pain is concerned, he cannot think properly insofar as pleasure is concerned either. Because either pleasure can overcome him where his mind ceases to operate, right? And he'll run after pleasure even though it might be detrimental to him, right? Or pleasure could prevent him from seeing, pleasure will cause him to distort the facts, you see, right? Or pleasure can cause him to prevent him from seeing a certain point, which is really inherently harmful and will run after the pleasure, you see? But if it's pointed out, it's different people. Like somebody who's involved in pleasure, the guy just suddenly became a millionaire and decides he's going to run over the world and go into all his taivas. Now there's three types of people. One person says, just a second, my friend. You're running after your taivas now. It might not be a logical thing to do. One person says, hey, you guys are crazy, forget it, goodbye, I haven't got time for you now. Mine can't work, you see. Another possibility is where the person will say, yeah, let me hear what you have to say. Maybe you're right, maybe this is the wrong thing, you see. So he might not have been able to see the point himself, but once it's shown to him, he could see it. You see, that would be where only was blocked from viewing it. Or there could be a total distortion of reality, in which case the reality you present him is going to be different than his reality. So the imperfections will express themselves equally insofar as when he's overcome with pleasure, just as much as when he's overcome with pain. there wouldn't be any difference really. You see, it would just be a net result of the imperfection of the individual. But the answer, you understand? That's what I meant over there. That it's not a specific thing in pain, these imperfections. They don't express themselves explicitly in pain.
How is it similar?
I need to see the reality of the situation.
Just that alone.
That's right. He's overcome with pain, right?
Right.
Now we say, but one second, if he had knowledge, then he'd be able to accept it. But what
right.
prevents him from seeing the knowledge?
Right, right.
The fact that he's overcome with the pain, right?
Right?
Oh, well, same thing with pleasure.
Right, right.
Person could be running into pleasure,
right?
Right? And he can't see the reality of the situation.
Same exact.
Yeah, there's no difference.
So therefore, what?
Right.
The question was, is
it beneficial for a man to suffer in order to be able to endure suffering? So we said, what did we say? The first thing we said was what? First one we said was what? Was that what? So we have to separate the physiological. That you can't improve upon. So pain will not help you in that area. That's it. Next area is, and so once you go past the physiological, now you get into the area of the psychological, right? Okay. Now in the area of the psychological, we asked the question, we said, what causes a person to be able to endure pain? It's painful. Physiological is painful. So what do we say? What's the answer? What causes them to be able to endure pain?
The
acceptance of reality. Now, acceptance of reality is dependent upon knowledge. It's not dependent upon pain. It's dependent upon knowledge. Now, the question is, now, what prevents them from getting this knowledge? Now, if those things that prevent them from getting this knowledge are such which pain will help, so then pain will be good. But we found out that it's not those things which pain will help. You understand? It's the inability, it's a certain imperfection in the human being, an inherent imperfection in the human being in terms of his mind, right? Now, pain will not help his mind any. What will help his mind is knowledge, right? And a knowledge of himself, a knowledge of how he works in regard to everything in life. When he analyzes and perfects himself in regard to every area of life, he will be able to endure pain. So it comes out that he is who is more perfected can endure pain to a greater degree. Right? If that's the case, so then the only way to improve the man is to allow him to be free to gain knowledge, like we said to begin with. That's the way a person perfects himself, through Torah and mitzvahs, not through pain. Pain isn't going to perfect him. Right? So since there is no specific ability to endure pain per se, but rather endurance of pain is a result of the sum total of his perfection, right? So then what the man needs is perfection. And pain is a deterrent, because pain deters him from perfection. Because it prevents him from gaining knowledge and improving his mind in relationship to his emotions and learning how to see reality in spite of his emotions. So on the contrary, pain is something which is detrimental.
So now
we're at the question again, what benefit is there in pain? There's one aspect of pain that we didn't mention, but I think it's a simple thing that it's not true. Sometimes people will think like this. They'll say, if you go through a great pain, then you can endure a small pain. You see? Yeah. We said in the beginning. Now, what is it? So somebody will say, well, maybe that's why it's good to go through a great pain. So then you can endure a small pain. The answer is like this. The answer is that is something else. You see, that's an act of comparison. Do you know what I mean? That's an act of comparison. In other words, if a person the release from a great pain is itself pleasure. So if a person is released from a great pain, so then he experiences as long as he can associate with the release of the pain, you see. But that's not a permanent affection. That's why a person gets sick. He says, "Oh boy, I should have been so happy when I'm healthy. The main thing was my health." A few months later, you'll ask him how is he doing. He will not say, "Well, I'm doing fine. I'm enjoying my health." You see, he will only say it as long as he associates to the release of the grip of the pain. You see, because the release of pain is pleasure. That's not any type of perfection. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. See, that's why it doesn't work. So people say, I should have valued my health. You know what I mean? Yeah, you should have, but you can't, because you can't spend your time... It's only a state you go through. It's not a real perfection. In the beginning.
I got a question.
Their death, torturous death, it wasn't because they had any previous training in pain. You don't find anywhere that previous training in pain, especially not for pain like that. But the reason why they were able to accept the pain was the sum total was an indication of the sum total of their perfection. That's right. That's why they were able to. In order to be able to be perfect, you have to endure pain. And by enduring pain, you perfect yourself. That's why the story of the kid in school who had a little wolf and ran to school, you know, a Spartan kid, and the wolf, he wasn't supposed to have a wolf in school, so he put it under his shirt. and the wolf was biting away at his stomach and ate his stomach out, and suddenly dropped dead on the floor without complaining. See? That's like, that's as if perfection is relegated to the ability to endure pain per se. No, we don't hold that way. There's no perfection in the ability to endure pain per se. There is perfection in man. And if man is perfect, then he can live. He's an individual who is in relation to reality, lives in a proper perspective in relation to reality. Once he has that, then everything that reality has to offer, he will be able to accept in the proper way. He'll be able to endure pain, he'll be able to endure pleasure, he'll be able to endure everything. Everything is an endurance. And we mentioned when we learned about Yom Kippur. So we said that that Kabbalah Seyisurin is a Mechaper. Kabbalah Seyisurin is a Mechaper. So that's why Yom Kippur is a Mechaper. Yom Kippur is the day of Kabbalah Seyisurin. Because there's only mitzvah in the Torah where it says, Inui is Yom Kippur. Ve'inisim es nafshasechem. It's the only time. Why? Because we said that Kabbalah Seyisurin is a total acceptance of God's will. See? Means I accept, and not just in Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a prototype, but acceptance for life. It means that a person, the highest level is that a person loves God, he loves the source of this universe, and he is ready to accept anything which that reality dictates, because it stems from that reality, he has to accept it. So that's the high level. That's the Kedusha Yom of Yom Kippur. Inui, Tainus. So Yom Kippur is the only day that has a Kedusha Yom of Tainus. Okay, so Midaraisa. So your question is,
even my Savino,
yeah, heart causes a bad pain. Let him think about the, let him get to know himself. Think
okay.
About things.
No, good question. Pain, that's a good question. That's a good question.
Why does he have to
okay.
go through the experience?
We always
there. You don't want to get it? The other one.
Who yeshiv esecha eifer? So, it's what do you call it? Describes his pain, he's scratching himself with the cheres. Then his wife said, right? Baruch Alekim Vamos. Yeah, that one's not going to go. God did not accept the evil. He says, V'chol zos l'chot yiv v'svasar. As of this point, he still didn't sin verbally. Interesting thing, huh?
What exactly?
What? Chazal said
that
the spasa, he didn't sin with his verbally. Believe a chata. Yeah.
What exactly happened here? I didn't get the picture.
She said to him.
Well, did he undergo some type of yisurim?
His children,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, his possessions, right?
He was already covered with disease.
Covered with disease physically, he was in torture.
I almost read the book.
All right. He was in torture. And then his wife said to him, why don't you be Baruch Hashem, right? And die. Why don't you say something against God already? I mean, it would be the natural reaction. So he said, what are you talking about? You're talking like a low individual. He says, we can accept the good from God and not accept the bad. And it says he still didn't sin. Then it says, verbally, he still didn't say anything bad. Then it says, the three friends came and they they couldn't recognize him. That's how he was so distorted from the pain and the illness, they couldn't recognize his face. I mean, it must have been quite a metamorphosis the other way. So it says they started to cry when they saw him. They sat with him on the ground for the 7 days, 7 nights, and nobody said a word because the pain was so great. And then he started to talk. Then he spoke. So that's when, before that though, he didn't, right? He didn't sin verbally. Interesting thing. So what are Chazal saying? You know, I mean, Chazal. Okay, what does Pesukim tell us? What are Chazal? What does Pesukim tell us? And Pesukim show us that the man underwent a progression, a downward progression, right? Plus, he did verbally say things against God. That was next. That was coming up in the Paragimel. See, but at the first point he didn't. Interesting thing. What is the whole idea? What is the whole idea there? What is the idea? See,
They're showing you a philosophy that he had and what the results of that philosophy is. What was the philosophy? The philosophy was Gan Esatov Nekabo Meisa Lekim Esarolo Nekabo. That was his philosophy, right? But it says B'chol Zos Lochoti Yiv B'Sfasov. At that point he still didn't sin verbally. But Chazal put in very wisely Avol B'li B'chota. What are they trying to tell you? Trying to tell you that already the germ of the chait really was there already at this point. You see, what caused them to sin verbally? It was just a matter of time. See, that's why it says that the three friends came by, sat down after 7 days and seven nights. Then already had he started to verbalize. See.
So what was his philosophy though?
Ah, so you have to see. What the Torah is telling you here is what the sefer. It's telling us at this point is that there is a certain philosophy which will help a person up to a point. See, a certain tolerance. There's a certain tolerance level there. You know what I mean? That's what he was... with the philosophy, the first philosophy that he had, it would be good up to a point. See, up to a point. But beyond a certain point, it won't work at all. That's why Chazal say that when it says that he didn't sin verbally... But the liba chata, what was the implication of the liba chata? Implication already is that since it's something of tolerance, already it has already begun. You know what I mean? It's already in motion. The process is already in motion. But it'll take a certain amount of time, a degree, a certain degree, till it's fully developed. So this fasayim, what is mitzi b'sfasov, is really nothing more than what the philosophy already is. If a philosophy is good, that means that it's a philosophy which can defend itself against all situations, right? Mm-hmm. Now over here it appears like it defends itself against all situations at first sight, but the truth of the matter is, if that was so, it would always, even in the extreme case, it would still defend itself. But the problem was it was faulty, but the fault isn't readily observable until you have a certain degree to bring it out. You know what I mean? That's what Chazal said, it was fasa, the terrorist. So the liba chata means the philosophy already was failing.
What is the flaw in that philosophy?
I wouldn't know yet. I'm just trying to describe what it is. Mm-hmm. Right? So the philosophy already was failing. But it wasn't enough yet to be manifest. You see? That took time. See? But the flaw was already there. Because Baliba already was chata. Now, what was this philosophy that he had?
I don't know the only tolerance.
What?
I don't know his philosophy.
The proper knowledge?
Maybe his philosophy was really right. But his ability to cling to it became defective through his disease.
He has emotional problems. Uh-huh. So what's the whole purpose of the Sefer? The purpose of Sefer is that Eve was giving arguments, valid arguments. The purpose of to understand the arguments he was giving and the counter arguments that his friends gave. What are you going to say? The man was such an individual that he simply got lost in emotional problems, and there's no purpose for the whole Sefer. The statements are worthless. See? On the contrary, this shows you the level of the man. The level of the man was that he never lost his mind. See? No matter what, no matter how bad the Yisurim were, he still was a rational individual, searching for truth. He says, in one of the programs, he says, show me, he says, I'm not asking you to help me. I'm not asking you to cure me. He says, just show me the reason. He says, just show me why. See? So the whole thing is that he's searching for the reason, which means that he's irrational, his mind is still not distorted. His emotions didn't overpower him. He says, he keeps saying yes to the friends. What did he say? You got the English one over there? I should have brought mine. Did I bring me something or give a ransom for me out of your substance, or deliver me from the enemy's hand, or redeem me from the hand of tyrants? Teach me and I will hold my peace, and cause me to understand wherein I have erred. See? Shows you about the level of a man. Terror doesn't talk about just I'm an emotional person. He's a person who, no matter how much you saw he had, he was ready. Just all he needed was the idea. Just give me the idea. Let me understand that. See? But the emotions, apparently, his emotions were in line with reality. Okay? I would say that's the prevalent philosophy of most people. Because you see, most people, they can go through a certain amount of tzaras without denying God.
After a
right?
while they break.
What? But after a while they break. That's
yeah,
right.
Concentration can't
that's right. That's right. I don't know if you're exposed to a lot of these situations, but I personally have come in contact with a lot of these cases, a lot of these Okay, so that was something that most people like that. That the, even from people, I mean, they might not say it to everybody, but certain things that people, you know, tell me that they might not tell others, you know, that they reach a point, you know, they're from, they go to shul and everything, keep, it's a little bit of contradiction to go to shul, you know, everything keep going, but they say, look, I'll tell you, Rabbi, the truth of the matter is that I really question God in terms of, I mean, I lost a little bit of my feeling for God after this. That's what they say, you know, quantitative thing, you know?
Okay.
He's not old yet. What he said, Gamma said, roll in the cobbles, and I think he got angry at his wife. Right? But pretty soon he himself was going to fall into that trap. Just a matter of time. Yes?
If not for the idea that.
Below individuals?
How could you say such a thing?
The different.
What?
How could you say such a thing?
If you can think it.
If you tell me something,
you say that this is a. How could you say such a thing? See, so you say, oh, I can think it? Is that it? If it's so terrible to say, so then how could you think it? And if it's all right to think, what's, you mean that little transition to verbalization?
Yeah,
that
makes it difficult.
It's true, it's true, it's not true. Is it true, it's not true? Is the idea good, it's not good?
Something that he doesn't verbalize.
Also, funny is Chazal, because Chazal say, B'chozos lochati v'svasa, right? The Chazal says, he didn't sin verbally, but in his heart, he sinned, right? But let me ask you a question. Does that sound like a man that sinned in his heart? Where he says to his wife, I am like a daber achas and a volis to daber. Gamas a raw. Gamas a tev in the kavah, it's going to be a raw in the kavah. Sounds like he's saying this is ridiculous. And really, at the same time, he's thinking in his mind. He's thinking.
Yeah,
how can you say that? Sounds funny, huh?
No,
it's a Pasuk seems to be. What's the shot in the Pasuk? It's an interesting thing, huh? What does the Pasuk mean? What's the Pasuk mean? It's a funny thing. You're telling me that it's so far fetched, he's telling his wife that she's crazy. And he's thinking the same thing? So what's she crazy about? Well, she didn't say it, she only thought it. She told him to say it. Alright. So what's the. What's the shot? What? Already, the truth of the matter is that all the forces that. Were going to come out, were already there, you see. But there was an opposing force. See, there was an opposing force. That's what the Torah is telling us something about the dynamics of Yev's mind. In other words, there was really, that's what he mentioned before, but also, the forces for his words against God were all there already. They're already there. The only thing is there was something else which was opposing it. Something else which she was clinging to, which was opposing it. And that's why, precisely when she mentioned it, he reacted so vehemently, because he himself was fighting those forces within him. See? And she, when she presented that idea, you see, she was an externalization of the same forces that he was fighting within himself, so he let her have it. See? But that battle of the forces would not really last too long. Eventually, the force which he was clinging to put down the other... to suppress the idea that she was getting at would eventually fail. See? And that's the average person. That's the way the average person does it. The average person has forces with them. When something goes bad, actually they really have a complaint against God. A quiet complaint. Non-audible complaint. Silent complaint, which you don't hear. They might not even hear it. But what's happening is, at the time, that one group of forces is pushing down that little... Also, there's a conflict. Conflict. That's what the Torah is really saying. The Torah is saying there's a conflict. That's the average person's philosophy. It's exactly like the year before.
God is
when God does something which to them appears to be wrong, unfortunate, so then what happens is, and there are many, I'm not putting down the troubles, because there are troubles in this world that really are very serious. I mean, you mustn't make light of the troubles that people go through. Some people live through a hell, living torture. Take a look at different people's lives. Some people, actually go through mental, physical anguish, pain. Pain in this world, the amount of pain and torture in this world is tremendous. So I can't make light of it. The only thing is that what you could say is that what happens is that if it's a small thing, you can put it down. Small thing you can put down. But a big one you won't be able to put down. That's the most people like that. A small thing they can take. But when it reaches a certain tolerance level, which they can't take anymore, that's it.
What
do you mean it's
blame?
Not audible?
What? Who does the atheist blame when those things happen? You're lucky to believe in
philosophy. It's a philosophy which gives way under extreme duress. It's a philosophy which is good for small, small amount of stress it can take. But too much stress and it breaks. Most people are that way. Most people are that way. Very, if a person isn't that way, he's on a really high level. Let me put it that way.
Exactly.
You're not talking about, when I say most people, I don't mean most people I'm on. I mean most people, even people who have pretty much knowledge. So if a person isn't that way, he's on a different level altogether. It's a hard level to be on. Most people under tremendous duress, the weakness comes out. They can take a little bit of strain. They're willing to take a certain amount from God, but total strain, and they're going to give way. Very hard thing to. I see people who went through concentration camps and other things. I mean, I never really. I can't really blame them. You know, I can't be very careful because no one knows whether. No one knows. Hard to know whether. Any one of us will be different. Difficult to know, really. Difficult to know. Really. Live through certain things that are unimaginable. Pain's unimaginable. That's what he is. That's talking about in the year. Now, people could say you can make light of it if they didn't go through it, you know? They didn't notice it. But once they go through it, then it's a different story, right? It's not an easy thing. It's a tremendous high level for a person to be able to withstand such pain. Now, the question is, what is this philosophy? That's good. It's a functional philosophy. Functional up to a certain point.
Aren't there certain people who don't have to...
But actually, intellectually, it's not a philosophy, because intellectually, the philosophy has to be able to withstand the extreme. See? And actually, it doesn't even withstand... Philosophically, it's not consistent, because it doesn't even withstand the small amount. But in the small amount, you don't notice it, because it's covered up. You know what I mean?
Aren't there people who went through the...
Sometimes they listen, do they say, whatever God does to me is good?
Whatever God does
to me is good. And they really believe that his knowledge is above every other being. I mean, so then, no matter how bad it is, they should always be able to maintain that. No, right?
Right.
Because it means it's good, but we just don't understand the good.
Right.
If a person has that form,
withstand all the.
When a person thinks it's bad, they don't think it's bad in a tremendous nature.
Say that whatever God does is good when the thing isn't that bad.
Right.
But
some level of distortion
they can tolerate.
Right. But when it's really bad, then they can't say
that's good.
They can't
say that.
That's what I want to know. That wasn't good.
So how would you?
How does this job say? It's all for the good, because God wants me to get a better job tomorrow.
Yes. That's just convenient. Yes.
But how can they explain for the fact that God allows the devil to exist?
It's not, you can't help it.
Just right.
Gamzulatova. I think that philosophy is really cloaked with the terms Gamzulatova.
What just shows that everybody got
it. They'll say, but it's a funny thing. Like if you go to a person, like I told you, if you go to a person, you tell them to an individual of this type, and I mean an advisor who was from this school. And you tell him, look, I lost my job, and this and that. He'll say, Gamzulatova. But if you tell him, Rahman al-Salam, that someone come and tell him that the child died, he wouldn't say, Gamzulatova. I doubt very much.
He say.
And that, yeah. And that time, he won't say, Gamzulatova. Right? And there, he realizes it's inappropriate to say such a thing. You know what I mean? And my wife died and said, Gamzulatova.
When a small pain.
Yes, no, when exactly.
What does he do?
Sometimes. Sometimes they borrow dynamis, sometimes they say Gamzulatova.
What is
I never saw a book which actually was described up to where you go with each point. You know, each
it's
point.
One of the classes what? You take when you become a rabbi or something.
Yahadis in general, I think. Yahadis, the biggest instance is here, Sefer Yahadis, you know? Because it doesn't hide anything. Other religions, they try to cover up a lot of things, you know? Cover up. Yahadis opens up every complaint that a person has in life. Openly. Every complaint. It's not disguised, it's not mitigated, it's in the full force. Wait to see later what he himself says. Complaints, openly. Things that nothing's hidden over there. Everything's straight. This is the way a person thinks, this is the way a person feels, and it's open in the safe. Doesn't ask you to turn it. Yeah, this never asks a person to disguise his emotions, not to be honest with himself. All the complaints that people have are right here openly. This is it.
So what is the philosophy? What do you want to say?
I think he defined it.
Yeah, God, who defined it?
So
does what he defines as good to himself, right? But the they do not maintain. They maintain, in other words, that God does good, but they maintain simultaneously that the good is
what they perceive
as the good, right?
Right.
And the bad is that which they perceive as the bad. In other words, they're good and bad is what they're... In other words, like if it's a small thing where they could still understand that a good will come out of it.
So they good in their framework.
Good in their framework, then they accept it.
They want to get so bad that that's the worst
Once
bad in their own framework, so they can't picture
impossible.
Any good that could come from it. It's not worth it.
That's right. Okay? So that's the philosophy.
They think that it's inherently good or
yeah.
How does this fit into Eeyore's statement?
That's what I was just going to ask that. It says like this. It's a funny thing, but if it doesn't seem to be fitting in there. But so like this. It says, Gam es atov nekabel me'eis olakim ves aroh lo nekabel. Eve was one step ahead of that. Eve said, because the average person says whenever something happens, he says that it's
L'tayva.
That's L'tayva. But Eve apparently didn't say it's L'tayva. He said, Gam es atov nekabel ves aroh lo nekabel.
So he's saying that the raw is wrong.
So he was saying that it is raw, but he says we have to accept it anyways. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He says, Gamas Atov, he says, Ratzalama, Im Omnom Shedai Hera Lonu. Hine Od Yavo Moed Hashem Akabel Gamas Atov. Volonosif Lekabel Odas Ara. He says, even though now it's bad, but there will come a time when God will do more good for us. In other words, whatever. What is the pshat of it? What is the pshat? I mean, what is the pshat in the pasuk? What is the pshat in the pasuk? What does it mean? I think the pasuk is telling you something else. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. But the pasuk itself doesn't say it. The pasuk says, Gamas a tevne kamas a gimas a rola and a kabel.
Well,
what was he
saying?
Notice
I'm saying we have
maybe
to be... So I have a philosophy, but I have to be bad.
Right.
He's
saying we have to accept it also.
Right.
What kind of thing is
must
this?
Must accept actions
of God. He didn't really have any philosophy at this point. He didn't really have any understanding.
He's just taking it.
Didn't have any understanding. As a matter of fact, the Rambam says in the Marna Vuchim, the Rambam says that it says everything about Eve, but it doesn't say it was a chacham. That's what he says. See? Voyo Ishahu, Tom, the Yashar, the Re'elikin, the Sar Meira. But it doesn't say chacham. That's what the Rambam says. Interesting. I want you to understand when the Torah doesn't talk about a fool. When it says it doesn't say chacham, it means that what the Rambam means doesn't mean that Eve was a fool. Eve was no fool. If Eve was here, he'd be smarter than all of us. But it means that his philosophy wasn't at this point developed in this area. See? Doesn't mean he was a dummy. It doesn't talk about his intellectual powers. His intellectual powers are very great. But he hadn't yet the proper ideas, which would later be formulated. In other words, the whole Sefer is a formulation process of knowledge. He goes through different levels of knowledge in the Sefer. That's why I can't say Chacham in the beginning, because Chacham in the beginning means he doesn't have the answers. He doesn't have the answer. So he starts off with one philosophy and then you see how he changes. You know what I mean? That's what it means. It doesn't mean he's a fool. That's Chassid Shalom. And the Torah doesn't talk about a fool.
But
otherwise, you couldn't even say Tam V'Yosha. V'Rei L'Kim. What's Tam an idiot? Not the Tom Yashar. Very intelligent person. But who didn't have the answers, it means there was certain knowledge which he would attain, which he did not attain at this point. Did not have at that point. Okay? See the Rambam says it? Now describe the job. The text does not say he was an intelligent, wise, or clever man. But virtues and uprightness, especially in actions, are ascribed to him. Okay? And then later it says, manifest itself as good. It's a good steer. This is later it says, the problem is described either by way of fiction or in accordance with real fact as having manifested itself in a man famous for his excellency and wisdom. See? Okay? Mm-hmm. The view ascribed to Job is the theory of Aristotle. He couldn't have been too stupid. Okay.
Yeah.
What does it mean? That's what I say. What it means is that it doesn't mean that he was unintelligent. He's an intelligent man, but it means that the Sefer is an unfolding of ideas. See, there's two types of... in other words, if you're going to say that man had the knowledge in the beginning of the Sefer that he had in the end of the Sefer, then already it's a different story. That means he was perfected in terms of wisdom. So it doesn't say that he was perfected in terms of wisdom, but it would say that would be misleading. would imply that the that there is no change in his philosophies. He's an intelligent man, but the Sefer is actually an individual who was very intelligent and brilliant in every area, except this one area over here, he hadn't put his mind to it. He hadn't, the area had not been exposed. And here's where he starts penetrating. And he goes from one level to the next. He starts moving. Okay? That's the whole Sefer. All right? That's the Rambam. It means that he was imbued with a certain loyalty to God. That's what it means. And a certain emotion of loyalty, a certain conviction of loyalty to God. So that's why he said to his wife, he said, how can you say that? You mean we're going to accept one thing from God and not the other? I mean, the proper thing is that a person should remain loyal to God. That's the proper thing. It was an ethical proposition that he had.
Well, wasn't
his
premise that they being loyal to God?
It wasn't a matter of, he was one step ahead of the person who was the Gamzul HaTova. Because the Gamzul HaTova person is not really, he's maintaining something which is completely ridiculous. Because he's maintaining that God has greater knowledge than him in this case, right? And that's why God knows it's for good, and he doesn't know it's for good. And yet in the other case, in the second case where it's too severe, already he says, no, God doesn't know what he's doing anymore. You know? How is it possible? God is so superior. See? He saw that's an inherent contradiction, so even we don't understand it, so God is doing it for the good. See? So it's like a somewhat, he's a little bit, he's within the framework, a little bit outside the framework. Now, Eve had a different proposition. Had a proposition that a person, since God is the creator, a person must accept whatever the creator gives. That was his idea. A person must live in this way. He must live with the idea of acceptance whatever God gives. That's the way a person must live. So that was
God is the ultimate understanding.
I don't care why.
That's
the
reality.
That makes sense. Hey, God is one. You have to accept it. Never mind what you think is good, what you think is bad. You always have to accept whatever God gives you. That was his proposition, which is not a wrong one. Accept. You must accept.
So
that's what.
What do you mean by accept?
A person.
What does accept mean?
Accept means you must take it and make it a part of your emotional life. I'm not talking about Nachum Ishgamzu. I'm talking about the average person who uses Nachum Ishgamzu's terminology expression, you know, whenever he wants to. I'm talking about the average individual who grabbed onto something. It's time for tail. Now take Nachum Ishgamzu out of the class. The man had a simple. Every year people say, look, there's no reason for all this philosophy. The simple way of life is to accept what God tells you, that's it. That was his way. See? Not, no deeply, he can't ask a question on this philosophy. What do you mean accept?